What has your research here found so far?
I found here that the Nauvoo case and the Icarian adventure here in Illinois, it's an amazing, amazing history about human struggle against nature and about trying to realize one's dreams. It's a fascinating history. It's a fascinating story about people that came here in Illinois in the United States and finally created this society and this nation. And I would also like to say that Western Illinois University, by all means, because I work on this question for several years, is by far the most important center, has the most important center for research on Icaria throughout the world. You have a magnificent, magnificent center for Icarian studies here, which has almost everything one needs to know about the Icarian society, the Icarian adventure.
And what else do you... I mean, you're going to be here for a little while, aren't you, here in Macomb for a couple more days?
I was for a few days, but I have to move back to Chicago tomorrow, and then I fly back to Europe.
Oh, okay. Are there any other places in Illinois that the Icarian... I know you think you mentioned they tried different places, and Nauvoo was one of them. What other places in Illinois?
They were in St. Louis, and then they moved in Iowa, and they went finally to California, in a community they called Esperanza, which is not very far from San Francisco. And the Icarian communities, they lasted for 50 years. From 1948, they started here at Nauvoo in Illinois, and they ended up in California, and the last one ended up in 1898, which means 50 years of Icarian history in the United States.
And what happened to the Icarians? Like, what made them leave Nauvoo?
They split up because there was a lot of struggle and conflicts, political conflicts between them. There was the majority and the minority. The one side, there were two political parties, actually. One party that were more conservatives, and they were trying to build up the Icarian society based on certain values with no real contact with the outside people, whereas the other one, where they were more, let's say, liberal, they wanted to be in contact with the U.S. society outside Icaria, and they wanted to integrate little by little the U.S. Society. So this difference, they ended up in some kind of civil war. There were also some fighting, and they split up. And each time they were creating a new Icaria, it was the same story that was going on. They were divided, and a part of them was living, and the other was staying at the place they settled down. And little by little, they were integrated by themselves. So little by little, the Icarian communities, they became part of the U.S. society. This is how they ended up.
And what connections have you made to the Icarians? I think you touched on the Icarians to the European situation today. What connections have you made?
At three levels. First level is that both the Icarians and Europeans, when Europeans started thinking, dreaming about the European Union and the union of the European continent, they both had this dream of creating a new society. The second thing is that law, in both cases, legal regulations, was the instrument that was supposed to ensure the realization of these objectives. And the third thing is that when things started becoming more and more difficult, when crisis in Utopia and the European Union appeared little by little, law was once again there as a shield against hardly any other problems. And in fact, what happened is that they used law as an instrument in order to solve problems, but which was a very, very bad choice, because with this choice, problems became even bigger, because it was not a legal problem. It was an ethical problem in both cases.
And I think you're touching base with one of the questions asked about a utopia. Is a utopia a real thing, or is it just a fallacy?
I think, as I said during my lecture today, I think that utopia is in any case necessary. It's that kind of horizon that you never reach. You never actually, you see it, but you can never reach, but which is necessary in order to make any journey worth of. That means that it's any kind of project that, of course, you can never realize, but it's worth moving towards it, because in that case, you can feel, you can live big adventures. The Icarians, after all, they didn't succeed in creating Utopia, but their story is fascinating, not only for them, but for U.S. history.
And I think you also touched on a public sphere. I was having a little confusion about that. What is a public sphere,
yes,
the way you're describing?
Public sphere, which is a term that is used in by European scholars, especially from Jürgen Habermas, who is a German philosopher, means that there are two major levels of human living. The personal sphere, where you are at home and you make your own choices, and there is the public sphere. Public sphere, it's your university, it's your hometown, it's the associations you are part of, it's the political parties, it's the nation you live in. That means that in the public sphere, you participate. You participate, we all participate, or we should participate at the decision-making process by expressing ourselves, by voting, by taking action.
And can America learn a useful lesson from the Icarians, what happened to them?
I think there is a couple of lessons that the U.S. Could learn from the Utopians. First of all, the one thing is that the United States were, probably still are, a very, very open country, where projects that might seem a little bit crazy can still be realized. There was no other place in the world back in the 19th century where such ideas could really be experienced. It was the right place to be. So that's one lesson. Another lesson is that I think that diversity. Utopians were supposed to be some kind of socialists. They weren't communists. We're talking about people that were there before Karl Marx. So it's not a way of talking about socialism in terms of Russians or political parties or subversive powers or things like that. But we're talking about people that had their own ideas about freedom, about equality. And after all, I think that above all that kind of classifications between political systems and political parties, I think that these ideas, liberty, freedom, prosperity, happiness, are part also of this U.S. society. So I think that this is another lesson, that in this U.S. society, people that came here from another part of the world with completely, let's say, different ideas, they had this thing in common. They believed in a certain number of fundamental values that are also between the fundamental values of the U.S. society until today.
And just one last question. I just had a little confusion. I think you were mentioning something about having laws and laws and laws and overabundance of laws. Is having an overabundance of laws a bad thing?
Too much of law kills the regulation, because if you have too many laws, first of all, they overlap, and so you get confused on which law is applies. And then, above all, if you have this kind of behavior by saying, I'm going to solve all problems through regulation, that means that you don't have any self-responsibility. That means that you wait that your legislator will find the magic solution to all your problems and you do nothing. And little by little, in that way, you simply see problems getting bigger and bigger. So this is why I'm saying, yes, of course, law is necessary. Law should be here, but it should be efficient, and we should regulate and be there as a legislator whenever this is necessary, not in order to cover all kind of human action.